Hey, how's it going, everybody? This is Chris. Welcome to episode 49 of NML Crossing. And it's been a minute. It's been many, many minutes, actually. It feels like a lifetime, to be honest. It's been a hell of a couple of weeks here. We did the move. It's not completely done, but we are in the other house, the old house, and boy, moving's kind of a trigger for me. I don't want to get too deep before we, you know, talk about the thing we're here to talk about, but moving's difficult for me. I don't react well to moves. Very much a creature of habit, which is probably obvious by my content creation methodology. It all has to sort of be a certain way. Otherwise, I start to, you know, get itchy and freak out. But being in this this house again is surreal. It's bizarre. There's a lot of emotions that came up with it. It's very, very strange. We lived in this house from 2017 to 2021, and now we're back, and it's odd. It's like we went back in time without the benefit of actual time travel. It's surreal. It's a bummer in a lot of ways. Because the last time I was here, I was kind of a different kind of cat. I was a lot less healthy in pretty much every way possible, emotionally, physically, mentally. I was just kind of all over the place. And I don't know, there's a lot of ghosts here that I'm having to contend with that I wasn't prepared for. I really wasn't. I thought this would be like, you know, putting an old pair of shoes on, but it was anything but. And it's tough. It's weird. It's so bizarre. Moving is not fun. And I'm sure I'm not rocking anybody's socks there by saying that, but it sucks. It sucks a lot to have to move, and or to decide to move, to finally decide to move, to do the thing you probably should have done a long time ago. It's difficult. And the transition back here was complicated. I think I mentioned last episode, it's been forever since I've done one of these, but I think I mentioned that I'd moved my entire comics collection back from the house we were in to this house. I don't know if I mentioned, I think I did mention that I ran every single box up a flight of stairs, which should tell you that I was storing my collection on the second floor of the home. And, you know, I was telling people about that, and I would, you know, it's like, hey, how's the move going? And I'd be like, oh, you know, I moved the comics over, and, you know, I tell them about all my, you know, travels up the flight of stairs with loaded long boxes, and I'd get the same sort of reactions. It'd be like, you put 110 full long boxes on the second story of your house? And I started to have panic attacks that I was going to cave in the entire second story with all that weight. And so, like anybody who lives in a two-story home, you know, like sometimes you'll step somewhere on the second story and you'll hear a creak. I mean, it's normal, right? Every single creak I heard, and I swear I was hearing more of them, I was scared that the entire collection was going to fall through and, like, land in the living room and in the garage and just be a disaster. So after a few sleepless nights where I was just so scared of that happening, we went out and we bought a couple of heavy-duty industrial shelves, and I assembled them and started running all the comics back downstairs and into the garage. I think that was last Tuesday. Maybe it was last Monday. Whatever day it was the day after I released the last episode, because I was planning on doing more episodes that week. But I was just running up and down the stairs for 6, 7, 8 hours. It was ridiculous. And it was a killer. It really, really hurt to do it. So that was even before we moved. And then moving day was just ridiculously painful. And unexpected, which is the worst of it, probably. You know, when you expect something to suck, and it sucks, then it's like, okay, well, yeah, I knew this was going to happen, and I'm prepared for it. But when you're expecting something to offer you a whole lot of relief, and it hits you in a certain way, it's like twice as bad, you know? I complained about that house a lot. And I mean, I really don't mean to get into the weeds here, but I don't really keep a journal and I don't have any friends. So this is kind of my only outlet. I compare leaving that house that really didn't work for us anyway to leaving a job that I hated. You know, I've talked about this on the air before. I used to repair windshields. And to repair windshields in the state of Arizona in the summertime isn't fun. It's actually quite painful to do that because windshields get hot. And in order to work on a windshield, you need to get them to cool down. So a lot of my time was spent trying to cool a windshield gradually to the point where I could work on it and where it doesn't shatter. You know, hot glass or windshields will blow out like crazy. And I remember finally resigning from that job. And on my last day, you know, I get home and you expect it to be like, okay, I never have to do that again. So it's like a huge relief and boy, on to the next thing. And no, I was bawling. I was bawling my eyes out. It's so weird, you know, how we react to things. And moving was similar. It was a similar reaction and not my finest hour, but I guess it's just one of those things that makes us who we are. And I don't know. So all that to say, it's been a dismal and terrible couple of weeks here at the House of Chris. And that is why there have not been any episodes or really any updates or really anything from me for the past little while. And speaking of hearing from me, you know, a funny thing happened to me on the way to uploading last episode. I realized I forgot to talk about the damn issue. We went through the synopsis, and I think we did a little bit of mail, and I forgot to talk about the issue. So we'll try to talk about that with today's issue as well. And not to vamp any further, but speaking of issues, in my time here, I've been trying to keep myself busy. Haven't been doing much scripting, but I wanted to catch up on my reading, so I read the entire Chip Zdarsky run on Batman, the current run. Read the entire thing, except for the Catwoman, Batman, Gotham War thing. I'm not going to read Catwoman. You know, I'll read Catwoman for the show, but I think to read Catwoman now would give me some of the bad kind of ex-lapsed flashbacks, and we don't need that. We definitely don't need that. But if anybody's read the Zdarsky stuff, let me know what you think about it. I'm of a few minds on it. I thought it started out tremendously strong. The Failsafe storyline, which is actually still going on now in a way, but Failsafe was really, really cool. I liked that a lot. The second arc, I liked the idea of it. It went on a little long. Hey, you guys let me know if you've read it or not. I don't want to go off on a even more of a tangent here before we get into today's book. But if you read it and you want to discuss it, please let me know and we can definitely do something along those lines. Now, with all of my tales of woe, or many of my tales of woe out of the way, how about we get into today's book, which is Batman number 563. Had a March 1999 cover date. The story is No Law and a New Order Part 3, Tactics. Written by our man Bob Gale. Pencils Alex Maleev. Inks Wayne Foucher. Colors Dave Stewart. Letters Willie Schubert. Edits Illidge, Gorfinkel, Vincenzo, and O'Neill. Cover price $1.99. And this one comes with what I call the Joker tax, because it's got a J. Scott Campbell cover. It's a really cool looking cover featuring the Joker, who does not appear in the issue, if I'm remembering right. I wrote this script like 100 years ago, but I don't think he's in this issue. But it's a really cool cover. Unfortunately, it's one of those covers that you're probably going to have to pay a premium to own. This was a spendier one during my No Man's Land hunt. I think I probably paid like $8 for it, which, you know, all things being equal, it isn't a huge amount of money. But when you're trying to collect an entire run, that one is an outlier. And it's like, oh, crap, that one's going to hurt. And it's actually one I don't think I've ever seen for like a reasonable, you know, reasonable cover price. I've never seen it for anything near cover. So anyway, enough of that. Let's get into the issue, because we pick up right where we left off last time. We got the Blue Boys, the GCPD. They find themselves surrounded by the street demons. Now, before they can pounce, they're shot in the back by Sergeant Pettit. Now, Sergeant Pettit reveals that he didn't have all that much in the way of confidence in Gordon's spray paint themed tactics. He then dares Jim to tell him that he was wrong to shoot these gangbangers, and the commish cannot. Now, he lines up the street demons' corpses right under the freshly painted Lowboys' tag. He then cries out to the demons, warrior style. You know, the whole, like, clinking bottles and come out and play, EA? He does that. And it doesn't take long for the gangbangers to arrive. They see their dead members and proceed to stalk the streets for some Lowboys. Pettit and company lead them to a Lowboys' den while keeping themselves hidden in the shadows. Do the buzzing Z's annoy anybody? Let me know if they do. I don't know if I'm overdoing it or not. I can't not do it when I see words ending with a Z. It's so silly. It's so 90s too, isn't it? Anyway, the Blue Boys climb up a fire escape where they can get a good vantage point of all the action. And, well, it doesn't disappoint, because before we know it, we got a full-blown gang war. And Pettit appears to be quite proud of his work here. Now, later on that night, we join Jim Gordon and Sarah Gordon in bed together. Now, Jim, he's not sure, any of what just happened was right. Yeah, he's still a cop at heart. He's still not used to this new normal. He says that he envies Sergeant Pettit's black and white view of the world. Now, Sarah suggests that, in this world, that's the right view to have. There isn't much room for ambiguity or gray in this no man's land. Jim, he's struggling with this, and he worries about how far they're going to have to go. Sarah asks how far he's willing to go, and Jim doesn't know. He can't answer. Sarah reminds him that his top priority for the moment is protecting Babs, to which Jim says he's willing to go all the way if need be. Now, this takes us over to the clock tower, where we meet back up with our chronicler. Babs talks about the bloody, bloody, bloody Lowboys street demons gang war, and how both sides are currently engaging in propaganda tactics. Now, they burn their own dead members, claiming that they're from the other side in order to appear strong for the residents of Old Gotham. And we also find out here that it's day 99 of No Man's Land. Well, actually, we go panel later, and it's day 100. And we get more gang propaganda. Street demons are accusing the Lowboys of being cannibals in order to foment fear in the neighborhood, and to hopefully draft some new soldiers into the street war. Meanwhile, near one of the several blowed-up Gotham bridges, we find ourselves amid a trio of no-goodniks. Now, they're on a bit of a mission here, and they just so happened to run into that weird old man with a fake beard we met last issue. Now they surround him and ask what he's up to, and he says he's not doing anything. And so they decide to enlist him, at knife point, into their cause. They lead him up to the busted bridge and tell him that he's going to be going for a swim. Because you see, rumor has it that the harbor is littered with mines. And well, if they drop this dude in and he goes boom, that'll take care of one of those mines. And if there's no explosion, they'll know that it's safe to make a water exit from No Man's Land. Now, the fake Beardo, he winds up walloping one of the baddies with a chop to the back of the neck. Another baddie winds up ripping the fake beard off our guy, and we get a good look at his face. And it's Alfred. Just then, Batman swings in. Like, the real Batman. He proceeds to beat the ever-loving hell out of the bad guys, even knocking one of them into the drink where, well, it's confirmed that the harbor is, in fact, loaded with mines. He goes boom. As the dust settles, Batman helps Alfred up to his feet and apologizes for being late. It's a new Gotham, so it's hard to swing around and whatnot. He's got to relearn the place before he can be as effective as he needs to be. Alfred tells him that he looks good, and he also looked good in action. And Batman admits that it actually feels great. Alfie then suggests that he maybe finally touch base with, you know, his family. And so he does. He calls into Oracle on his special frequency. Babs is surprised but glad to hear from him, and attempts to confirm that it's him who's been using the bat tag in Dooley Square. Batman says he hasn't been there yet, and then immediately disconnects the call. Next up, it's day 102 of No Man's Land. The Lowboys and the Street Demons have beaten each other to the point where neither gang has much left in their respective tanks. It's now where the GCPD steps in to pick the bones. Or just walk in and announce that they're taking old Gotham back. Because neither gang can do anything. Anything even resembling putting up a fight. Before we know it, Sarah Essen is spray-painting the blue GCPD on a nearby wall, and the residents of Old Gotham emerge from their homes to celebrate the relative safety they're about to revel in under police protection. From here, we follow the commish to the clock tower where he is finally reunited with Barbara. Jim tells her that he just fought a war on her behalf. Which is, that's a lot of pressure to put on a kid, right? Anyway, later, Gordon has his crew round up the remaining street demons. We got Foley off to the side talking to Harvey Bullock. Now, he's still kind of perturbed that Gordon risked all of their lives to just save his daughter. He says that the commish sanctioned murder, and he should probably be ashamed of himself for doing so. Now, Bullock basically just rolls his eyes at this. Now, with the demons rounded up, the question is, what do you do with them? Prisoners without prisons don't make no damn sense, does it? Now, Bullock suggests they just let them stay in Old Gotham. Pet it? He ain't having it. He says it would be a sign of weakness to keep them around. Gordon suggests keeping them, but putting them to work. And Pettit ain't buying any of that BS either. Harvey compares the demons to terrorists, to which Pettit agrees, and he hints that he knows exactly how to deal with terrorists. Gordon claps back, reminding Pettit that they are a police force, not the Gestapo. And Pettit's all, cool, 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 cool. How about we let them share an apartment with your daughter, then? And that finally brings Jim Gordon on board. Gordon says that they'll expel them out of the territory, letting them become a problem for whichever fiefdom they land in. This ain't good enough for Pettit. He argues that they'll just refill their ranks and then return to take back what they think is theirs. He says there needs to be an actual penalty should they decide to return. A pretty harsh penalty. The penalty of death. He then asks Gordon if he's prepared to enforce such a penalty. To which, after a moment's hesitation, Gordon begrudgingly agrees. He hops on the megaphone to tell the demons to get the F out or die. Now, in order to show that they ain't screwing around, Pettit then blows the brains out of one of the gangbangers. Damn, Pettit. Say what you will, but the man knows how to get results because the demons then beat a hasty retreat out of Old Gotham. Now, Gordon, he is enraged at this point. Pettit ain't shaken, though. He knows that he's right. Gordon's threats at the end of the day were just words. Now, ain't nobody gonna argue with a bullet to the head, though. We get a tense stare down between Pettit and Gordon before they finally break off. Now, we wrap up today's issue in Dooley Square, where Batman meets up with Batgirl. And he compliments her costume. This is the new Batgirl, of course. She scoffs, saying that she didn't think he'd approve of her using his symbol. And he assures her that he doesn't approve. Batgirl tells him that Gotham needed a bat, and since he was off screwing around doing whatever, she decided to fill that role. Now, even with him now back, she suggests that he's going to need her help. He's not so sure, but she insists that that's the case. Batman says that he gave his other partners the boot out of Gotham. He didn't want this no man's land to affect them or to change them. Batgirl says that she's always had a weakness for behavioral temptations, so she's not worried about the new look city leaving its mark on her. Plus, at this point, she's already been doing the bat thing for weeks now. She does offer to not wear the bat symbol if Batman is completely not cool with it, to which he doesn't agree or disagree. Instead, he changes the subject to discuss the bat tags. You see, he likes the bat tags. He's a pretty big fan of them. So much so that he's going to steal it and start tagging walls himself. He then tells her not to disgrace his symbol. She asks if that means that she's approved. And he says, well, it doesn't mean you're approved, but you're also not disapproved. At least not for now. And that's where we end it. Next time out, we're going to wrap up our first No Man's Land arc in Detective Comics number 730. So, what did we think about these last two chapters, since I totally forgot to talk about it last time? How ridiculous. That just shows you how out to lunch I've been and just how, I just off my game. Not that I ever really had a game, but, boy, been thrown for one hell of a loop here. These were really, really good. So much so that, yeah, we talked last time about the way that we were doing this entire little journey here, where we could have started with No Man's Land number one. That could have been episode one back on January 1st, right? But I wanted to go through all the stuff that get us here. And Not to be a broken record, but it's very much that Wizard of Oz feeling, you know, where we go from black and white to color. It's a totally different thing. It's a totally different world. And you appreciate the color more because you were just in black and white, right? You can feel the change. And moving from, you know, Aftershock and the road to No Man's Land to actual No Man's Land is one of those moments that it happens so seldom in comics or maybe just in fiction in general, where you've just such a seismic shift, and no pun intended, of course, but such a shift in tone, and just it's just so gutsy and so interesting and so much fun to discuss and to receive. Like I've mentioned before, and I'll mention a million times again, I only read this in the abridged form before. I didn't do it with the appreciation of what came before, or the, in the case of our friend Nick Scratch, a lack of appreciation for what came before. But it's in doing it this way, I feel like it adds just so much to the experience. Seeing Gotham in this new light, or new dark, I guess. It's like you not only read it, but you also feel it. Seeing, you know, our main takeaways from these past two chapters are, of course, the new Batgirl and the Blue Boys. And those are my main takeaways here. Seeing someone like a Jim Gordon, who, you know, was pretty much chased out of Chicago in this continuity. I don't know what his current continuity storyline is, or his origin, or his origins, I guess. But we have a guy who was chased out of Chicago. He was brought in with a very, very corrupt GCPD during year one, and has ever since been like this bastion of everything that's good and right with Gotham City. Sure, he, you know, hangs out with an urban legend and counts on this urban legend to solve a lot of crimes, but at the end of the day, he's a good guy with a unshakable sort of constitution or resolve. And here, we're seeing him in a new light, because it is a new light. Everything's new. And we see him making decisions that can jeopardize the safety of his squad in order to maybe take a page out of Batman's book and scare people, you know, elicit fear, but also to save or protect his daughter, which is a very human reaction, but a very unprocedural reaction. Because, I mean, you think about things like the cost of the few over the cost of the many, you know, and the fact that he ignited a war which ended with many, many casualties just to protect his daughter. And I love that we're getting different takeaways from the various Blue Boys. You know, we got Foley, who, this is a big sticking point for him. You know, he thinks that this was irresponsible. He feels like they were used as pawns, and in a lot of ways he's correct. But I love the fact that he's actually getting the time and the space to say those things. Because these are the sort of things that I like being part of the conversation here. Because throwing it back in Gordon's face, and I think it was last issue, it was the Shadow of the Bat issue, where he like basically dared anybody on the squad to clap back at him. He's like, "You're damn right we're doing this to save my daughter. And does anybody have a problem with that?" And, you know, Foley, of course, had a problem with that, but he didn't speak up then. Because he knew that you don't get between a man and his family. Especially in this new sort of unknown landscape that we're working in. It's very, very powerful stuff. I definitely appreciated that. Pettit, holy cow. We don't usually see that kind of ruthlessness. But this is a new world. And I love the fact that this is a guy who is like reveling in this new normal here. He's thriving. He's getting away with literally murder. Stuff that he could never do in old Gotham. Or not the neighborhood of old Gotham, but pre-Quake, BQ Gotham City. You know, he couldn't just go around blowing brains out of gang members. But here, I mean, who's going to stop him? And why would they? Right? Gordon here, he's kind of got the best of all worlds here. You know, relatively speaking, of course, because nobody wants to be in no man's land, but he had a problem solved and he didn't have to pull the trigger. He has deniability, but the job got done. The message was sent. The neighborhood is safe for now. All because Pettit does not care. All he wants to do is dole out justice. He's basically the Punisher with a badge, and it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool that we're getting these different variations on the GCPD members, where usually it was just like, okay, we've got these detectives, these are the ones we're going to follow around, and they're going to have their personalities, they're going to be kind of silly, they're going to be funny, and they're going to be comfortable. There ain't no comfort here. Here we got Bullock, you know, kind of rolling his eyes a little bit at Foley, you know, calling out Gordon. But, I mean, then he's standing there. He's got a front row seat for somebody getting their brains blown out. Pretty cool stuff. I mean, not... that was poorly worded. People getting their brains blown out is not cool stuff, but the story is cool. The new Batgirl... Does anybody not know who that is? I really don't want to spoil it. I mean, it's probably obvious. If you don't know, it's probably obvious. But I don't want to come out and say who it is. Especially since we covered all those issues of Wizard where it's like, DC is going to keep this under their hat for the next year and a half. I don't think they will. But when you find out who it is, that conversation that she and Batman had at the end of this issue was going to make a lot of sense. And I'm pretty sure most everybody out there has figured it out already. There's someone we haven't seen just yet, you know, and they probably have the same, you know, body dimensions as this new look Batgirl. So that's fun. That's going to be a fun story to follow. And I really, you know, knowing what I know, I really dug the conversation that they had at the end of this issue. I also liked the way that Batgirl made her presence known and felt in the issue of Shadow of the Bat we covered last time. I love how they're still playing into the urban legend, which I've said it from the start. I have a very wibbly-wobbly sort of relationship and take on the urban legend gimmick. I think it's kind of weird. I think it doesn't entirely work. It works if you don't think about it. It's one of those sort of things. But I like how with this new Batgirl, the introduction of this new Batgirl, they're leaning into the urban legend. Where it's like, hey, who's gotten a good look at the Batman? Who's to say it's not a woman? And at the end of the day, what, you know, thug is going to go around saying that he got beat up by a girl? I love the way that that was all laid out there, because it makes total sense in the context of this world we're dealing with. Now, the thing that surprises me about today's issue in particular is that Batman's back already. I mean, we know that he's been gone for over 3 months in comic time, but I wasn't expecting him to show up quite this soon. I thought that it was going to... I don't know why I thought that, but I figured it was going to be a little while before we had him. Not that I necessarily want, like, a Tales of No Man's Land pre-Batman showing up miniseries or anything. I just... I don't know. I don't know that I was necessarily ready for him to be back front and center. But, I mean, you build the world the way you build the world. And, of course, he is the sun that everything revolves around. So he's going to need to show up eventually. So there are worse ways to bring him back, you know. And I do like that he came back kind of reinvigorated. We don't know where he went to just yet. We don't know why he disappeared or where he disappeared to. But him coming back and Alfred actually acknowledging is like, wow, you looked pleased with yourself when you were in action. And he begrudgingly admits that, yeah, that felt pretty damn good. I think that's pretty cool. So overall, you know, this issue and the issue we just discussed last time, really, really great stuff. You know, this No Law and a New Order is knocking my socks off, especially after the road to No Man's Land. But yeah, these get high recommendations. If you haven't read them, check them out. I don't think you'll be sorry. But with all that said, how about we hop into the mailbag here? I wasn't going to do a mailbag today since it's still me getting my feet wet again, but I think I want to. So we got a couple of letters here. We're going to talk about last episode here. We're going to start with our friend Chris Yu, who says, good to hear you back. I hope the move is going well. I remember carrying out all my comic boxes when I sold my collection, so I feel your pain in having to move yours. And yeah, I mentioned that at the start of the show. I moved everything twice, which sucked. And continues to suck, because it's weird. I've had a lot of chest pain lately, even before the move started, which I thought was stress and, you know, just anxiety, which, you know, that happens to me on occasion, especially when we're talking about moving, because that's, like I said, that is a big trigger for me. At one point, I was actually, I was hospitalized after a move, and don't want to go too deep into that story, but it was not, not my finest hour, but, on top of all the chest stuff, I did have some cardiology stuff I had to deal with, which I'd been putting off for a long time. You know, they say when it rains, it pours, of course. So it's like now everything has to happen all at once. So had to get the heart checked out over the past few weeks here. Had to do the echocardiogram and had a stress test this morning, actually, where I found out that I have a tiny leak in one of my valves. But they assure me it's not one of the important valves, which, okay. heart stuff is terrifying, of course. I mean, the last time I was recording shows in this house, we had just lost somebody very dear to us from heart stuff, which is very, very scary. So all I'm thinking is, like, I was running up and down stairs with these boxes over and over and over for days, and there's a leaky valve, and my heart is a millimeter too thick, and, oh, God, it's just, anxiety is just everywhere. It's insane. But how did I get on the subject? Oh, yes, yes, carrying out all the boxes. Yes, I definitely feel your pain as well, Chris. Not fun. Not fun at all. Chris continues, on to No Man's Land. I liked this issue. Seeing Jim Gordon throw police procedure out is a riveting plot point. He's always been the epitome of law and order in the GCPD, and to see him reduced to a ganglord really says a lot about what Gotham has become. And yeah, I probably should have read this before recording, because that's a lot of what I just said during the talking time portion of the episode here. It's exactly right. I agree 1,000,000%. Chris continues, the interludes were my favorite part. Showing what life is like for the people left in Gotham sets the stage for the action happening in No Man's Land. And I didn't remember the Joker making an appearance this early on. Yeah, that was weird. That was very weird, especially with all the Wizards we've been reading, where they're talking about the Joker going away for a long time and not coming back until Harley shows up. And here he is. Here he is. We even see him doing his own tag. So he's back. He didn't show up in this issue, despite him being on the cover. But we know he's out there. We know he's out there lurking. Now Chris wraps up with, I've always had a problem with this Batgirl costume. The lack of eye holes in the mask bothers me. How did she see? Other than that, I like the look of the costume. It looks like something put together with the resources left behind in Gotham. Its simplicity is its strongest feature. And yeah, I mean, this is definitely style over substance, for sure. Because, yeah, how would that work? You know, you can't, there are no eye holes. You can't see. But it is a very, very striking costume here. It's, I mean, they're still using a take on it to this very day. When I was checking out the current run, the Czarski stuff, I saw some ads for Birds of Prey, which I guess they brought back. And I've seen this Batgirl costume on in a few of the ads. So they're still using it. It is still very, very striking. The whole patchwork look, it's super cool. It really, really is. And I think it was one of the more memorable images from this entire No Man's Land run, is that Batgirl costume. It really, really stands out. And it is such a sign of, like you said here, it looks like something very ramshackle, put together out of just whatever was left. And it's very, very striking. It's a powerful image. Very, very cool stuff. But thank you so much for writing in and sharing your thoughts, Chris. I always love hearing from you. Next up, we got CJ, who says, glad you're back. I'm sorry, guys. I was back for a day. Glad you're back. Hopefully you don't have too much more moving craziness. Well, yeah. Yeah. At this point, I hope there isn't much more. There's gonna be. There's gonna be. I can't make any promises about my prolificity? However you say that word. For the next little while. But hopefully we're almost through it. Hopefully we're through the worst of it. I'll put it that way. CJ continues. Here's another numbered list of mine, something I also love when reading letters pages, and something that makes it easier for me to organize my thoughts. I love numbered lists. I love them. 1. I liked your discussion of context, and I agree wholeheartedly. It reminds me of a line that was repeated often in the TV show The Wire, quote, all the pieces matter, unquote, which was also about context mattering, which was a big theme of the show. And that's something I'd go to the grave with. Context is very, very important in anything you do. Context really, it just makes things work. And I think that's part of the problem that I have with current year comics, is the fact that they go 5 or 6 issues and then it's on to the next trade collection. It used to be 6 issues, and then DC and Marvel realized they could sell us 5 issues for the same price as 6, so they did that instead. a little bit of a shrinkflation in our comics industry here. But so often these stories are written without much in the way of context, especially when we were doing New 52 and into Rebirth, where nobody really knew what was what and what was real and what happened and what didn't happen and what wasn't going to work on certain creative teams' watches. You know, it was all nebulous. And then you introduce things like Black Label, you know, which is any of that in continuity? Some of it. The Three Jokers is in continuity, as far as I know, but what about the other stuff? Is that in continuity? Nobody knows. Nobody will commit. So context is very, very strange. Or it's very, very important. And the fact that we don't always get it really hinders the experience, at least for me. That was one thing that the Zarsky run is just overflowing with, is context. You know, there are references to Batman RIP, you know, the Grant Morrison stuff. There's references to the end of the New 52, the end of the Darkseid War. There are references all throughout. Tons of context. There's a lot of Zurinar stuff in there, which is an interesting topic, an interesting side topic. I was reading in the that old Batman encyclopedia. I think it was Michael Fleischer did this in early mid-70s, I think. It's an encyclopedia. It's exactly what it sounds like. It's entries in alphabetical order. And I was checking out the Zurinar one there, because Zurinar is a Silver Age deal. And I love the way that they kind of massaged that into being what they turned it into. If you're not following the current stuff, or if you haven't read RIP, it's a treat. The Zurinar stuff is very, very fun. It might be overstaying its welcome right now, but it's fun. So context, I'm on so many damn tangents. I apologize. It's been long since I've spoken out loud, so a lot's coming out. But, context matters. That's what I'm trying to say here. And I sometimes conflate context with continuity, obviously. But, I think they kind of go hand in hand in a lot of ways. Back to CJ, so I can stop vamping. Two, I also think that graphic novel is a term that is used improperly and done to make comics seem respectable. Making comics seem respectable, something I cared about much more as a kid and a teen, but don't so much anymore, since it can backfire and lead to overly dark or pretentious stories. And yeah, another thing I agree with 100%. The term graphic novel, when you first discover it as a young comics fan or whatever comics fan, it sounds literary. You know, it makes it sound like you're not wasting time reading comic books. You're reading a graphic novel. And I remember graphic novel was the term that was thrown around a lot to differentiate everything from Vertigo. You know, Vertigo, collections of Sandman, which are actually trade paperbacks. They're collections of serialized comics, but they're called graphic novels. Nobody will call Sandman a trade except me. Everybody else is like, oh, this Sandman graphic novel, volume one. They try to make comics seem a little bit more, as CJ put it here, respectable. And that's something that, as a kid or as an edgy teen or as a young adult, I think a lot of us ate up. I know I did. I know I felt a lot cooler saying that I had a graphic novel than a trade paperback. Nowadays, you know, I'm at peace with comics being what they are. Comics are just supposed to be fun, a way to distract and maybe sometimes, you know, pull a few plugs out of your brain and just enjoy, you know. There's that escapism term, which is true in a lot of ways, but I think it's just about being entertained and having fun and kind of turning our nose up and referring to them as graphic novels. Yeah, I think I'm over that kind of thing. And CJ is totally right here, because, I mean, when you think about graphic novels, you're thinking about pretty much anything Alan Moore wrote, which I think it's easy to conflate, you know, a graphic novel with, as CJ put it here, a dark or pretentious story. A dark or a very purple and very pseudo-literate, literature-ish story. And I don't think we need so much of that, right? I think we got enough of that. And there is a place for it, of course, and I love a lot of those stories, but I think when someone, the nebulous someone who might endeavor to produce a graphic novel, when they're throwing their darts, they're going to aim for the darker. They're going to aim for the more flowery and pretentious, at least in my opinion, and I may be projecting, and I probably am. Back to CJ. I do think graphic novel can be a helpful term when used properly, or a term that means the same thing, a book-length comic with a single story that was all done and released together instead of serially. I'm not tied to the term itself, but I like seeing a distinction made between work made for that format and work designed for with a different format and then compiled later into a, quote, graphic novel. Too often, though, graphic novel is used as a term for a collection or a collected or long comic, that's a little bit disappointing. Trade paperbacks get called graphic novels, which isn't accurate. It's not like we call collected seasons of TV a movie. That's a pretty good point. Interestingly, one of the most famous, quote, graphic novels, Mouse, is really more of a trade paperback since it was released serially and eventually collected into part one and part two. Yes, it was meant to be read together, but that's not how it was released. Even graphic novels that are short stories created and first published and for that graphic novel are under this umbrella term. But we don't call prose collections of short stories novels. So a separate term for this would also be nice and avoid the overgeneralized use of graphic novel. Not helped by Eisner using that term for his collection of short stories, A Contract with God. That's true. That's very true. And Mouse is interesting. Because I am a fake-ass comics historian. You know, I don't know everything. I know a little bit. But I would never call myself a comics historian without the fake ass in front of it. Because, yeah, I'm no scholar. You know, I'm just a fan who likes to research stuff. But I was at a comic shop about, boy, probably a year and a half, 2 years ago. And I was looking through the magazine section, which I always do. And they had the first two issues of Comics Book. That's C-O-M-I-X Book, which is something that Reggie and I talked about. I think Reggie bought a collected edition of Comics Book probably back in 2017, 2018. And he told me about it when we were working on our Underground Comics series for Weird Comics History. And this, if you're not aware, Comics Book was Marvel's attempt at doing Underground Comics. This is back in the, I think it was mid-70s. Dennis Kitchen was a big part of it from, Kitchen Sink. But anyway, I found the first two issues of Comics Book from, the mid-late 70s or whenever. And I was flipping through them, and I was shocked to see the first few pages of Mouse in it, in the first issue. Because I didn't know that Mouse was serialized. I thought Mouse was the quote-unquote graphic novel. So to see it serialized in like the last place I ever expected it was pretty cool. CJ continues. He says, I will say that if I'm speaking to a non-comics fan, I'll use graphic novel instead of trade paperback. Unless they're really wanting to know more about the medium, or if I'm boring my girlfriend with yet another point about comics minutiae. So I'm contributing to the problem because while I think a more nuanced set of terms would be better, I do understand how it can make things easier for someone not as interested in comics to just talk using the general graphic novel term. I agree 100%. If I'm talking to anybody who isn't one of us, if I'm what does John Byrne call them? A civilian? I think he just calls people who aren't into comics civilians. So if I'm talking to a civilian and I'm talking about a collection, I will just say graphic novel. If I'm talking about Crisis on Infinite Earth, yes, that is it's a graphic novel. If I'm talking about Watchmen, okay, yeah, sure, it's a graphic novel, whatever. But that's a great point by CJ here, because it's easy, you know, to say graphic novel, and people will understand it. Even those uninitiated will get it. And they won't look at you like you got three heads, and they won't look at you like you're, you know, being a pedant and just being a, I don't know, a gatekeeper to the comics fandom. I don't know. Back to CJ. This is point number three. He says, a plot point from the previous episode. Dropping aid to the Gotham citizens just to see them fight over it. Very strong stuff, partly because it reminds me of a scene from Elie Wiesel? Elie Wiesel's Night, where he describes people throwing bread into cattle cars, transporting people to concentration camps in World War II just to see them fight over it. This type of action is something that, when I read the Batman books as a kid, would have seemed unrealistic to me. But sadly, it's a part of human nature and history. And that's true. That's true, and it's very sad. Humans can be the worst, right? Humans can be the absolute worst. I think it was like when the internet and videos were starting to like actually happen. Was it like bum fights? Where like people would just go like arm homeless people and just have them fight each other? We humans can be the worst. Absolutely. So yeah, seeing, you know, the people fight over the very things they need just to live. It's a dark side of human nature, but I'm glad they included it here because this is a very dark story. CJ continues, I think this is partly why I like this storyline. Even though some of the internal logic doesn't work, it seems more realistic than most superhero or Batman comics, while still being an entertaining superhero comic that offers escapism. I think some of the letters from the comics letters pages you've read, where the letter connected the story to the same type of thing that happened to them in the earthquake, they show that this hits closer to home and reality than many other Batman stories. Well, yeah, because there's relatability there for sure. And as we've talked about from day one, you know, Batman can't punch an earthquake. You know, Superman can't punch an earthquake. Earthquakes are what they are. And people experience them just like the people in Gotham City did. Maybe not to the extent, or maybe worse. And people have suffered losses and they've had to recover. And they've had to live in that world and try to get out of that world. And maybe they were successful, maybe they weren't. There's a lot of relatability here. And like you say here, it offers the escapism because there is this very interesting and intricate way that the city has been splintered and broken off. And it gives us so much fodder and material for story. But it's based off of something that anybody can experience. You know, this isn't Bane with, you know, venom, you know, searing through his veins, running through buildings. This isn't about a nerd who was looking into a telescope and then became Nick Scratch. You know, this is a story that maybe even people listening have experienced. You know, the sheer terror and loss and fear, you know, that comes with surviving an earthquake or experiencing an earthquake. It's relatable, but it also is, it's an ordinary story. It's also an extraordinary story. It's also an ultra ordinary story. It's a lot to it. But I thank you so, so much for writing in and sharing your thoughts, CJ. I love talking about the semantics of the way we discuss our collections and our just the medium that we love so much. These are the sort of fun conversations that you might overhear at a comic shop and you might roll your eyes at them, but at the same time, you also would like to be part of those. And here we are. We're having a good time talking about it, or at least I am. And hopefully you're having a good time listening as well. But I think that's where we're going to leave it today. This has been a long one, but it's also been a long time coming. Of course, I know the schedule is spotty. Hopefully it'll start to work itself out in the coming days and weeks. I can't make any promises. I'm not a terribly stable guy at the moment. it's been difficult. A lot of stuff going on all at once here, but we are going to get through this, I promise. And we will work our way through No Man's Land and into something after No Man's Land, if everything goes according to plan, which I'm very much looking forward to. But we will get there when we get there, and we will, in fact, get there. Anyway, this is usually where I invite people to write in, and I will invite everybody to write in here as well. Like I said, I know it's been spotty, but I would still love to hear your thoughts on this story, on the current stuff as well, if you want to talk about that, since I actually know about it now. And I do have a lot of opinions. I just don't want to inflict them on people before I know people want to hear them. And I also don't want to spoil anything because they are new. But if you want to talk about the Czarski stuff, let me know. If you want to talk about No Man's Land, or if you want to talk about your moving experiences with your comic collection, or the terms that we use to describe our collections, I'm down for all of it. So you can write me at, where am I? Oh boy, it's been a minute. Chris is on infiniteearths.com, chrisandreggie.podbean.com, and weirdcomicshistory@gmail.com. And of course, all the socials are open and waiting for you as well. But with all that having been said, I'd like to thank you all so much for your patience with me and for sharing a little bit of today with me. And until next time, as always, hopefully, I'll be talking to you again real soon. See ya. Makes it harder to think straight. Starting over after it breaks.